tonight we're going to start a new series trying to launch a Christian School of Journalism, which I'm going to want to call the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism, as Henry Morton Stanley was the greatest journalist of the 19th century. He got the scoop of the century, Dr. Livingston, I presume, and all of that. But this, we need a Christian School of Journalism because there are five culture-carrying institutions: education, entertainment, news media, religious institutions, political institutions. Communists seek to infiltrate, subvert, and take over each of these five institutions. So right now we're looking at news media. Now, news media today doesn't have to be the mass media, the lamestream media, Slime Magazine, the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, the Clinton News Network, and the Cape Primes, and so on. We can have also social media, a whole lot of platforms, desktop publishing, but news media, whether it's Christian community radio stations, whether it's blog sites, websites, social media, emailings, newsletters, magazines that you produce on your desktop and send around, printed or electronic. And we want to look at a whole series of Marxist idols for destruction. The sin most condemned in the Bible is idolatry. And this is one reason why Protestants have always had a problem with our dear Catholic brothers-in-law. Because this seriously looks like idolatry to us. I mean, they say, what idolatry? But, you know, they kiss the feet, they bow down, they burn incense and all this. And as for our dear American friends, they have got one of the most obscene examples of idolatry I've seen in traveling across 36 countries world. This is called the Lincoln Memorial. Look at this. In this temple, as in the hearts of the people for whom he saved the Union, the memory of Abraham Lincoln is enshrined forever. I mean, how idolatrous can you get? This is a religion. This is really bad. And do you notice?
Yeah.
He's not sitting in a chair. He's sitting on a throne, and not just any throne. This is a Roman imperial throne, a la Julius Caesar, and Caesar Augustus, that sort of thing. And this, by the way, when they built this temple in the 1930s, who was in power in Italy? Mussolini. And what was the symbol? This is the fascist symbol. This is a symbol of the Roman Senate. It's the symbol of the fascist party. It was on all the Italian warplanes in the Second World War and so on. And so they made it at that time. They didn't, I mean, these things don't happen by accident. They don't choose these words by accident. The hearts of the people for whom he saved, I mean, forever. Goodness me, this is like seriously obscene. And I mean, just the size of it. It's really this sort of reminds me of Jeremiah, who says, they have gods who have mouths, but they cannot speak. They have ears, but they cannot hear. They have legs, but they cannot walk. And they've got to be carried. And, yeah, I mean, what kind of God is this? Well, in Eastern Europe, our friends prayed, Leipzig prayer meeting and all that, and they saw thousands of idols of Lenin and Marx and Stalin toppled, and even Addis Ababa in Ethiopia toppling this ugly idol to Lenin, which... They said the only good thing about the idol to Lenin outside Addis Ababa is it looked like it was walking towards the airport. In the East, you get all these idols. I mean, it's terrible. North Korea, Kazakhstan. This is idolatry of a high order. And, of course, you get MLK, Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And so tonight I particularly want to focus on a modern idol, Martin Luther King Jr. The truth about him, that's why it's in inverted commas. Some years ago, I was invited to evaluate a new university in Cape Town, Cornerstone University. I went to the graduation service, and it was a three-hour service, and I had a clipboard and pen. I mean, I'm that kind of person. I believe the weakest link is stronger than the strongest memory, and I was sitting there writing down everything interesting, relevant, positive. And in 3 hours of graduation service, every single speaker, I mean, chancellor, guest speaker, valedictorian, quoted from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Oh, and some quotes from Gandhi, Voltaire. And the main quote at the end of the whole thing was by the chancellor, who's a friend. or at least he was, until I confronted him about this. He said, in the words of the Invictus, in the words of Nelson Mandela character in Invictus, I charge you, he says to the theological graduates, you are the masters of your fate. You are the captains of your soul. Now think about that for a moment. Invictus is the name of an atheist poem written by an antichrist atheist pagan who hated God. And yes, Invictus was also the name of the film directed by Clint Eastwood to give all the credit to Nelson Mandela for a rugby team World Cup victory. Which made you wonder, when in history has a president of any country been accredited with the victory of a rugby team or any sports team? And if Mandela could enable our rugby team to win, then why didn't he enable our football team to win in the 2010 World Cup? But anyway, I mean, that's asking too many questions. You mustn't think. Facts ruin a good story. But Invictus is the name of this atheistic poem, and the poem is quoted twice in the film at very key points, and at the end it's a climax with soaring music behind as he reads the full quote. It matters not how straight the gate, nor how charged with punishments the scroll. To whatever gods there are, I declare, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. And Nelson Mandela quotes this twice. Now, what is he saying? What is the gate that's straight? Jesus is the narrow gate. What's the scroll that's charged with punishments? The Bible. To whatever gods there are, I declare, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. What is this? This is a fist of rebellion in God's face. This is like, what is a chancellor of a Christian university quoting from Invictus, for goodness sakes, and Nelson Mandela? Well, I went up to my friend afterwards and I said to him, you do know that Invictus was written by an atheist? Yes. I said, you know that Martin Luther King was a plagiarist, he was a pervert, he was a sexual deviant and a fraud? He said, yes, I know that. I said, then why do you quote from him positively? He said, Peter, if I don't quote from Martin Luther King Jr., people think I'm a racist. I said, well, now they know that you're stupid and you're a coward. John 8 verse 32 says, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. God is truth. God's word is truth. Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. Under the duties required in the ninth command, the Westminster Larger Catechism lists the duty of preserving and promoting the truth. The duty to stand for the truth. The duty to do so from the heart. The duty to speak the truth and only the truth in matters of judgment and justice. The duty to speak the truth at all times. The duty to study and practice everything true, noble, lovely, and of good report. And I'm quoting all from the Westminster Catechism. Under the sins forbidden in the ninth commandment, the Westminster standards includes the sin of giving false evidence, the sin of lying, the sin of concealing the truth, the sin of misconstruing intentions, the sin of exaggerating minor faults, the sin of perverting the truth to a wrong meaning. It is essential that we know the truth of history in order to recognize the lies of propaganda and indoctrination. We need to study the Word of God so that we can be freed from the deceptions of the world. In the book of Revelation we read, then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old who is the devil, and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, and he cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and put a seal on him, so that he should deceive the nations no more. Revelation 20. And in Revelation 12, verse 7, we read, and war broke out in heaven, and a serpent of old, the devil, Satan, who deceives the whole world. I mean, you're seeing a theme here. Satan is deceiving the world. 1 Timothy 4, verse 1 to 2, now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. We're warned that Satan will guard to deceive the nations. The Bible continually warns us, like in 2 Corinthians 2:11, lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. Or we shouldn't be ignorant of his devices. 2 Corinthians 11:3, but I fear lest somehow, as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. The scripture warns us of the lawless one according to the working of Satan with all power, signs and lying wonders. We read in Ephesians 2 verse 2, the prince of the power of the air, the spirit in our works and the sons of disobedience. So Satan is deceiving the world. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 4, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine upon them. Now, why am I reading all this? We've just finished the Biblical Worldview Summit, and as at the beginning of all of our camps and courses, we give people a welcome form. Now, one of the questions we ask people is, which leaders, political, spiritual, living or dead, are an example you respect and look up to? And inevitably, you get a whole bunch, like this time about a dozen, out of 130 that were there, about a dozen put Martin Luther King Jr. Some put Nelson Mandela. One even put Obama. Can you believe it? 8 years later, there's still someone who believes in Obama. And then you ask, what books have most impacted your life? And you know, we had at least a dozen The Shacks, even this time. Can you imagine? Satan is plainly deceiving the nations. You see, people are blinded by distractions. The God of this age distracts people, basically, lest the light of the gospel of Christ shine. So there's a lot of false lights, a lot of Luciferian enlightenment, the lifter, you know, false lights, to keep people in the light of Christ. Satan is deceiving the nations. And the bulk of people just don't want to know the truth. Education teaches you how to think critically. Indoctrination teaches you what to think. Repeat after me. Islam is a peaceful and tolerant religion. Say it often enough, you might believe it. The ability to think critically is becoming less and less common. We've been subjected to the greatest flood of misinformation and disinformation in the history of mankind. Misinformation is error, typographical error, sincere mistake. Frequently trusting in unreliable sources results in misunderstanding the facts of matter. Sometimes people are genuinely, sincerely, without any ill intention, believing something, but it's misinformation. It's a mistake. It's error. Disinformation is the intentional distortion of events or issues. While misinformation is unintentional, accidental, disinformation is intentional. Communist governments establish departments of disinformation. That's what they call them. Ministry of Disinformation. The British government and the American government, the First and Second World War, also had ministries of propaganda to manufacture deceit and to confuse issues. What if the history they teach us isn't even close to what really happened? In fact, that's what I'm going to advocate, is that most of what we get taught in the news media, in the educational institutions, and the entertainment industry is fabricated, false, and almost 180 degrees from reality. This is a true story. The names and the places are true. Only the facts have been changed to protect the guilty and to demonize the innocent. Truth is truth, even if no one believes it. A lie is a lie, even if everyone believes it. It's absolutely essential if you know the truth of history in order to recognize the lies of propaganda and indoctrination. Truth does not fear investigation. When you're forbidden to investigate, get super skeptical and really question everything. 1 Thessalonians 5, 21-22 says, test all things. Hold fast to what is good. Abstain from every form of evil. The scripture teaches us that Satan is deceiving the nations. So if we find ourselves in full agreement with Hollywood and the United Nations, we need to stop and carefully consider whether we've been deceived. I mean, just for example, billions of years ago, evolution, Big Bang, global warming, I mean, whatever they're trying to give you, it's lies, lies, and more lies. If you find yourself agreeing with the world on any of the big issues, then you've got to stop and think, wait a minute, am I being deceived? If you agree with the world on major issues, then Satan has deceived you. Propaganda, the calculated manipulation of public opinion to serve political and ideological interests, is pervasive. So, you can imagine, that concludes tonight's debate. Tune in tomorrow morning and we'll tell you how to think about it. Well, that's not realistic. They'll tell you how to think about it immediately. You don't have to wait till tomorrow. Edward Bernays, who was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, was a super important secular humanist who messed people's minds up. Edward Bernays was one of the top propagandists under Wilson, the American president in the First World War. The one who said he will keep you out of war and immediately after people voted for McCain, took them into the war. Well, Edward Bernays was the one who basically pioneered propaganda. The conscious, intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Telling people what they believe. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. This was well put by missionary to Hollywood, Ted Baer. He said, the media tells you how to vote. I mean, basically, the reason why most people vote like they do and lecture they do is because of what the media tells them. I mean, none of us have personally met almost anyone that is involved in the election process, and we're voting because we trust in the media that's informing us. And so basically he says, the media elects the President of the United States of America. And that's why this last one was so surprising, because the entire media was 100% pro-Clinton and anti-Trump. But the social media got Trump elected, plus a huge amount of going around in actual meetings on the ground. And that's why you've seen since then, a year ago, they have been going berserk on closing down anyone on social media that's stepping out of line and saying things they don't want. And they're talking about fake news. Well, the governments and the mass media have been the kings of fake news forever, but now they're complaining about people giving the truth that exposes their fake news. Propaganda aims to be other people's thinking for them. Propaganda today has moved into proper agenda. Not only controlling what you think, but how you think about it and what you're thinking about. The fact is, isn't it incredible that during the World Cup soccer, you knew that 2 billion people of the world were thinking about soccer? In Cape Town in 2010, and of course in Brazil in 2014. That reminds me, coming up to World Cup soccer this year. 2 billion people tuned in at the same time to the same soccer match. That's incredible. And then you could think, whether it's the Olympics or the Olympics openings, which is now getting super pagan, new age religion promotion, so on, or whatever the thing is, the Oscars. And, you know, here you've got a bunch of cocaine-sniffing, drug-addict, pervert blasphemers swapping gold statues with one another, telling you this is a great film. People go, oh, I've got to see that film because it just got an Oscar. Who cares? In fact, if it got an Oscar, that's probably a good reason to avoid it, because they generally give Oscars to really sleazy, disgusting characters. And the fact that everyone suddenly got upset because, you know, Harvey Weinstein was a pervert, she was abusing people, and think, but all of his films promoted that. What makes you so surprised that he is doing it personally when that's what he's promoting? And by the way, when you see the Nelson Mandela Long Walk to Freedom film, what's the first thing you see on the screen? A Weinstein company production. Harvey Weinstein's behind all of it. I mean, you can think of some of the worst films that's come out in the last 2 decades. Harvey Weinstein probably financed it, produced it, and executive whatever, and so on. And he's had his fingers in all of it. And now they're suddenly all horrified that, you know, he's a sleazy pervert. Well, all of his films are sleazy perversion, so what's the surprise? George Orwell is someone who blew the whistle on these people. He was a dedicated communist. He really believed in communism. He's a member of the Communist Party of Britain. But then he went to Utopia. He saw Soviet Union under Stalin. And he came back and he wrote Animal Farm and 1984. And he says, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder sound respectable. Collateral damage. Strategic bombing offensive. Saturation bombing. Sounds so much better than mass murder and terrorism. The further a society drifts from truth, the more it'll hate those who speak the truth. Yep. You wonder why they really loathe and hate homeschooling, pro-life, Bible-believing, fundamentalist Christians. You know, that just encapsulates everything they hate. Or you've heard of WASPs, white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant. males without AIDS. Mm. You know, I mean, how bad can it get? That's why. The people will believe what the media tell them they believe. In the Soviet Union, they called it propaganda. In the United States, they call it news. NBC, CNN, ABC. I mean, that's just so true. It really is. And who said it the best? Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Alexander Solzhenitsyn went to Harvard in 1978 and committed the unforgivable sin. In the Eastern countries, he said, behind the Iron Curtain, the media talks with one voice. But you're not surprised because we've only got one political party and they control the media. Now I'm in the West, the free democratic West. And your media also talks with one voice. And the same voice I heard behind the Iron Curtain. Who controls the media in the West? I mean, what worse crime could you commit than to suggest that the mass media is lying to us and is controlled and isn't actually free? Well, I mean, no wonder they didn't quote from Solzhenitsyn for the rest of his life after that. I mean, I have people saying, did Solzhenitsyn die? Well, no, not for the first 30 years after that, but you would have sworn he did because they didn't even ask his opinion about the Berlin Wall, Glasnost, Perestroika, nothing. They just hated him because he had, I mean, you can do almost anything, but you can't call the media liars. Well, Trump has. they can't buy him. Propaganda. What lies behind us and what lies before us are small matters compared to what lies right to our faces. Mm-hmm. Tell lie vision. To destroy what's left of your imagination by feeding you endless doses of sugar-coated mindless garbage. That's putting it nicely. To keep you distracted while restricting the limits of public debate by sensationalizing talking points to keep you focused on the trivial while ignoring the important questions. I never contradict the status quo because what I really do is deliver state-sponsored propaganda. What I omit is more significant than what I share. The SATV is the voice of the ANC. ETV is evil TV. The media represents the truth in our society, but the truth lies. The media lies by omission, by change of emphasis or emphasis, by distortion, by just outright lies, by putting words and images into your mouth, and eyes that were never there. So the modern slaves today are enslaved to the various forms of media. Brainwashing. From cradle to grave, the government wants to hold your minds prisoner. And just to be sure that you start with serious disadvantages, they want how many different inoculations and babies and kids? It's chronic. I mean, it's like massive now. And they give massive amounts at one time, and there's no way this can all be healthy. And in fact, it's not even properly tested. And the results are that since they've started this mass inoculations, not only have people died more from all the different things that's meant to inoculate you against, but it's also bringing more Alzheimer's, more autism, more of these other kind of things. It's just really bad. But so they're getting at you from chemicals, getting at you from news media. But I mean, the average person who goes to government schools can't think straight. If you don't control your mind, someone else will control your mind. Strive to be biblically accurate rather than politically correct. And to be right with God has often meant to be in trouble with men. Very well said, I'd rather offend someone into heaven than flatter someone into hell. And this lovely Russian proverb, better to be slapped with the truth than kissed with a lie. And I think we do some of that. Karl Marx said, the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. And that's why in the Reformation Society we're doing so much in terms of history, because it's the lies of history that we've got to unlearn. On almost any given day, you will be confronted with deception. The news media and the entertainment industry use deceit as their stock in trade. One example of how Christians have bought into propaganda is how many, quote, with respect and reverence, sayings attributed to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In recent months, over the years even, I've received numerous communications from friends and respected colleagues circulating quotes that are reportedly to have come from Martin Luther King. It's just like an industry. If you want to say, I was a drum major, say I was a drum major for justice. Say I was a drum major for peace. I was a drum major for righteousness. I mean, they make out like, and this is written on this idol in Washington. And yet this is in the same statue depicting the police and these poor police dogs who, you know, I mean, average police dogs protecting people. This is This is really very, and you know, this guy doesn't have a weapon in his hand, he's just a poor innocent person who's being attacked for no reason whatsoever. Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Martin Luther King said that first. He invented that. We will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words and actions of the bad people, but for the appalling sounds of the good people. Again, he's meant to have invented this concept. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. It's been proven that every single quote attributed to Martin Luther King Jr. was said by other people long before him. But they just keep quoting of them because they want to make it seem like he is a repository of great quotes. We had a Christian teacher at a Christian school recently who's in charge of the Christian fellowship at the school where my son Calvin went for a while. And she said, you know, as Gandhi taught, we must do to others we want them to do unto us. Gandhi said that first? Isn't that in the Bible? Didn't Jesus say that a few centuries, millenniums before Gandhi? You know, but they have, there's something all over the place where they attribute some great biblical concept to some pagan communist, and you know, a man who won't die for something is not fit to live. He is not the first person who said that. There's a whole lot of others. Only in the darkness can you see the stars. Oh my, how profound. I've decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear, says a man who hated. Peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal. If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then fall. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward. This has been said for centuries before him. But anyway, this is now something that he's patented. You know, sort of, just wait for the what's it? Copyright logo at the end. Take the first step of faith. You don't have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. And all these are meant to originate with Martin Luther King Jr. Really and truly. The greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is my own government. Well, actually, under Obama, that was true. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. And so they're trying to make him out to be this repository, this reservoir of profound, deep thought. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Every man must decide whether he'll walk in the light of creative altruism or in the darkness of a destructive selfishness. Darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. Let freedom ring, you know, I mean, on and on and on. But I mean, these are actually quotes that let freedom ring, not only as from the Bible, but the founding fathers of America had that whole let freedom ring and so on. I have a dream that my four children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of the skin, but by the content of their character. Which today, a lot of people would be delighted for, but in fact, you are judged by the color of your skin under Obama, Zuma, and all this, Mugabe, so on. Life's most persistent, urgent question is, what are you doing for others? I think Jesus taught that in the Sermon on the Mount. We may have all come on different ships, but we're all in the same boat now. Come with me if you want to live. Wake up. This is not the dream he had. Again, suggesting that things have gone wrong. Well, actually, the riots in the streets are exactly the dream he had. Key speakers at a Christian university graduation continually, repeatedly, profusely quote from Martin Luther King. And at a minister's conference recently, at Costa Bunchu, an overseas guest speaker quoted most positively from Martin Luther King Jr. And I had to go and correct him afterwards. When I'm speaking through an interpreter anywhere in Africa, when I mention the great German reformer, Dr. Martin Luther, inevitably the translator would say, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I have to say, no, I'm talking about Professor Martin Luther from 500 years ago in Germany. I'm talking about the Christian, not the communist. Many people are ignorant of the writings and teachings of the great reformer who launched the Protestant Reformation almost 500 years ago. And they regularly quote and actually erroneously attribute quotes from Martin Luther to Martin Luther King Jr. I've seen it, and it's just extraordinary. And I think it's the same reason as why Satan has used Geneva as the headquarters for the World Council of Churches, to take what used to be a fountainhead for Reformation, to take the name of Martin Luther. You type in Martin Luther and see what comes up. Mostly it's Martin Luther King. Even at the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, there'll be more Martin Luther King junk up there than things from Martin Luther. It's a hijacking of the concept. I mean, for example, I'm told that there's a whole lot of porn sites that you will use innocent names to hijack people in there. So, for example, you type in White House or Snow White, and you're going to get to some kind of porn site, unless you've got a protective block on your computer, which thankfully ours does, but I'm told that this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to hijack you from something good and great and pure and noble and wonderful to something evil. At many of our camps and courses and during our surveys and outreaches in the shopping malls, we find people listing Martin Luther King Jr. as one of the greatest people who's ever lived and as a leader they greatly respect. This has led me to undertake some research to find out what's the facts behind this modern idol, and this is what I found. Every January, the US media goes into a kind of frenzy of adulation for the so-called Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I mean, America's at the moment just going through that frenzy. And there's a lot of pro-lifers in America who quote from him as though he's a great pro-life advocate, which isn't even true. King even has a national holiday declared in his honor, an honor accorded to no other American, not George Washington, not Thomas Jefferson, not even Abraham Lincoln is another idol. Not even they have holidays of their own. They just have a generic sounding President's Day. A liberal judge sealed the FBI Federal Bureau of Investigation files on King until the year 2027, which is 9 years ahead still. Yeah. What are they hiding? We know that when they sealed the Lusitania files for 60 years, they were hiding a major scandal. When they sealed the Operation Keelhaul files for 30 years, you knew they were hiding massive government treachery and betrayal. And so you could continue. And same thing with the Katyn Forest Massacre files. They were sealed for over 60 years. But, I mean, when it finally came out, oh, what a surprise, the government was lying. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the only reason they seal files, is to cover their lies. Yeah. So let's look at this modern-day idol. Born in 1929, King was the son of a black preacher known as Daddy King. And he named his son Michael. And he was christened Michael King at his birth, January the 13th, 1929. In 1935, Daddy King had the inspiration to rename himself after the great Protestant reformer, Dr. Martin Luther. And so he declared to his congregation, henceforth, they were to call him Martin Luther King and his son, Martin Luther King Jr. None of this name changing was ever legalized in court, so Daddy King's real name, his son's real name to this day, is Michael King. We read in Michael Hoffman's Holiday for a Cheetah, according to the testimony of King's best friend at the time, Reverend Larry Williams, the first public sermon King ever gave in 1947 at Ebenezer Baptist Church was plagiarized from a sermon by the Protestant clergyman Henry Emerson Fordyce. Life is what you make it. It was word for word. The first book that King wrote, Strive Towards Freedom, was plagiarized from numerous sources, all unattributed, according to documentation assembled by the sympathetic King scholars. These are pro-King people, Keith Miller, Ira Zipp, and David Garrow. No less an authoritative source than the four senior editors of the papers of Martin Luther King Jr., which, by the way, that's an official publication of Martin Luther King's Center for Nonviolent Social Change, whose staff includes King's widow, Coretta. They stated of King's writings at both Boston University and Crozer Theological Seminary, judged retroactively, like they didn't have standards against cheating then, judged retroactively by the standards of academic scholarship, his writings are tragically flawed by numerous instances of plagiarism. Now, this isn't his enemies' writing. This is his friends'. Appropriate passages are particularly evident in the writings of his major field of graduate study, systematic theology. That's what he got his doctorate in, systematic theology. King's essay, Place of Reason and Experience in Finding God, written at Crozer, pirated passages from theologian Edgar Brightman, author of The Finding of God. Another of King's contemporaries, by the way, what's the picture on his wall?
Gandhi.
Gandhi, yep. Wonderful, born-again, Bible-believing, spirit-filled Christian Gandhi, yeah? Another of King's theses, Contemporary Continental Theology, written after he entered Boston University, was stolen from a book written by Walter Marshall Horton. King's doctoral dissertation, A Comparison of the concepts of God and the thinking of Paul Tillich and Henry Nelson Wyman, for which he was awarded a PhD, contains more than 50 complete sentences plagiarized from the PhD dissertation of Dr. Jack Bozer, the the place of reason of Paul Tillich's concept of God. Same title, basically. According to papers modeled by King Jr., in King's dissertation, only 49% of the sentences in the section on Tillich contained five or more words that were King's own. I mean, mostly plagiarized. In the Journal of American History by David Garrow, a leftist academic who is completely sympathetic to King, says King's wife, Coretta Scott King, also served as a secretary, and she had to be an accomplice in his repeated cheating because she typed it all up. Remember back then you didn't have computer things, you could just cut and paste. You know, she had to type it. So she must have been given a book, you know, take all this stuff from Tillich and just put it into my dissertation. And this is from King's Plagiarism, Imitation, Insecurity, and Transformation, the Journal of American History. And this is written, you know, by people who idolize him. Reading Garrow's article, you led to the inescapable conclusion that King cheated because he had chosen for himself a political role in which a PhD would be useful. And lacking intellectual ability to obtain the title fairly, he went after it by any means necessary. I mean, if you have to run in a Olympic race and you either take drugs or you cut across the course and instead of going the full course round or something like that, I mean, you get disqualified. You don't get awarded the gold medal. Why then, you might ask, did the professors at Troza Theological Seminary in Boston University grant him passing grades and a PhD? I mean, his marks are shocking. They're not even, this is the transcript record. If you and I had marks like these, we'd be failed. He gets a PhD for it. Garrow states on page 89, King's academic compositions, especially at Boston University, were almost, without exception, little more than summary descriptions and comparisons of other people's writings, not worthy of even an undergraduate, let alone a postgraduate degree. Nonetheless, the papers almost always received desirable letter grades, strongly suggesting that King's professors didn't expect much more from him. The editors of the Martin Luther King Jr. paper state, the failure of King's teachers to notice his pattern of textual appropriation. Read plagiarism and intellectual theft. Textual appropriation is somewhat remarkable. Researcher Michael Hoffman says, actually, the malfeasance of the professors is not at all remarkable. King was politically correct. He was black and he had political ambitions. The leftist professors were happy to award a doctorate to such a candidate, no matter how much fraud was involved. And I have seen that myself in colleges today. This is not unusual. Politics trumps academic integrity all the way along. In fact, you could say exactly the same thing for who was Tutu's sidekick, the one who said, "Are the ashes of Pretoria rise in New Jerusalem?" We heard him in Alan Boussac. Alan Boussac also had fraudulent degrees awarded in Holland by other people doing the work and so on. He didn't earn his doctorate. I mean, a man didn't have the intellectual ability to pass much more than matric, maybe, perhaps. But they gave him a doctorate because he had political ambitions and he is an anti-apartheid activist. So he had a team of people working to produce his things. Nor is it any wonder that it's taken 40 years for the truth about King's record of nearly constant intellectual piracy to be made public. I mean, what I'm giving you now is not a secret. It's fairly well known, but it's kept undercover by most of the mass media because you're meant to worship King, not question him. And by the way, everywhere you go in America, I mean, the streets are dirty with MLK Junior Boulevard and stuff like that. It's just incredible. Supposed scholars who in reality shared King's vision of a racially mixed and Marxist America purposely covered up his cheating for decades, and this cover-up still continues. So this is the junk you get on Boston University campus. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boston University changed the views of one man, and that man changed the views of the world. Are they proud of this? From the New York Times of October 11th, 1991, we learned that on October the 10th of that year, a committee of researchers at Boston University admitted there is no question but that Dr. King plagiarized in the dissertation. If you and I did that, we'd be out of there and probably criminal charges. However, despite its finding, the committee said that no thought should be given to the revocation of Dr. King's doctoral degree, an action which they said would serve no purpose. Serve no purpose? justice and academic integrity demands that in the light of willful fraud as a student, the reverend and the doctor should be removed from his name. I remember at my school, the school that I graduated from, Pines High, there was in our final paper, we're talking about a school magazine here, somebody put a poem in, which was later found to be plagiarized. And I mean, they stripped him of his academic credentials and everything because he had put in a poem to a school magazine. This wasn't a doctoral degree program. This was just a school magazine without attributing the source that it actually was a poem he'd lifted from somewhere else and put his name to it. And, you know, for that one poem in a school magazine, I mean, it's serious. Intellectual theft, intellectual piracy, plagiarism is a serious crime. You don't put doctor and reverend in front of the name of a perjurer and a plagiarist. King's famous, "I have a dream," that is deeply rooted in American dream speech. It wasn't his own. In both letter and spirit, the rousing conclusion of King's most famous speech borrows, without attribution, one given 11 years earlier by family friend Archibald Carey at the 1952 Republican National Convention, entitled "I Have a Dream," and it says exactly the same thing. While gathering and collating King's writings for publication in the late 1980s, the editors of Stanford University's Martin Luther King Jr. Papers Project discovered extensive plagiaries in his academic papers, including his 1955 doctoral dissertation. All these instances of plagiarism had apparently escaped detection during King's lifetime, even by his dissertation supervisors at Boston University. This is not credible. It's not possible that teachers can't spot this. I mean, I was always amazed at school how quickly teachers spotted things like attributing, putting in a quote without attributing the quote and things like this. They pick it up like that. I mean, a teacher, he can spot that sort of thing like a plumber can see a blocked drain. I mean, there's no mystery about it. It's as evident as anything. "And the walls came tumbling down." This is by Ralph David Abernathy, one of King's pals marching right next to him. He wrote the book, I think the first book, that basically blew the whistle on King's plagiarism. King was not a legitimate reverend. He was not a bona fide PhD. His name wasn't really Martin Luther King Jr. So what is left? Just a sexual degenerate with a Marxist agenda. That's it. On Labor Day 1957, a special meeting was attended by Martin Luther King, or should we call him Michael King, and four others at a strange institution called the Highlander Folk School in Monteagle, Tennessee. The Highlander Folk School was a communist front founded by Miles Horton, Communist Party organizer for Tennessee, Don West, Communist Party organizer for North Carolina. There's King sitting in the front row at this communist school. The leaders of the meeting with King were Horton and West, along with Abner Berry and James Dombrowski, all open, acknowledged members of the Communist Party USA. The agenda of the meeting was a plan to tour the southern states to initiate demonstrations and riots to institute communist revolution. And by the way, who else was in that same training institution I've just discovered very recently? Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks, this woman who just accidentally seemed to spark all these riots by sitting in the front of the bus. You know, and who I've heard many Christians lifting up as the person they most respect and who they first want to meet when they get to heaven, so on, Rosa Parks. She is trained Communist Party agitator at the same event. King, man of peace in a time of war. From 1955 to 1960, Martin Luther King's associate advisor, his personal assistant, was Baynard Rustin. There's King in the middle. In 1936, Rustin joined the Young Communist League at New York City College. Convicted of draft dodging, he went to prison for 2 years in 1944. Then, in 1953, the Los Angeles Times reported his conviction and sentencing to jail for 60 days for lewd vagrancy and homosexual perversion. Okay? Obviously an exemplary person, just the kind of person every minister wants as his pal and right-hand man. Rustin attended the 16th convention of the Communist Party USA in 1957. 1 month later, he and King founded the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or SCLC for short. There's the officers. The president of the SCLC was Martin Luther King Jr. Vice president was Reverend Fred Shuttleworth, who's also president of the Identified Communist Front known as the Southern Conference Education Fund. an organization whose field director, Carl Braden, was simultaneously national sponsor of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, Total Communist Front, identified communist, just the kind of man you want as your neighbor, and Anne Braden, his wife, also total commie, identified communist James Dabrowski. I mean, these are all Communist Party members. The program director of the SCLC was Andrew Young, later Jimmy Carter's ambassador to the UN, mayor of Atlanta, who did so much to betray Rhodesia in the late 70s. He was like one of the ones out there to get the knife in. Soon after returning from a trip to Moscow, 1958, Rustin organized the first of King's famous marches in Washington. This is under Leonid Brezhnev's rule. The official organ of the Communist Party Worker openly declared the march was a communist project. So communists said, this is our march. And who's leading the march? Martin Luther King. Although he left King's employ as secretary in 1961, Rustin was called upon by King to be his second command of his next much larger march on Washington, which took place in 1963, always culminating in the temple to Abraham Lincoln. Because Lincoln and Lenin have a lot in common. Do you know Karl Marx and Abraham Lincoln were correspondents, and Abraham Lincoln often looked to Karl Marx as his ambassador at large in Europe because he was the best cheerleader for Lincoln's war, Karl Marx. And most of Lincoln's worst generals who did most of the atrocities and burning and destroying of South were 48ers. They were communists who fled Europe after failed communist uprisings in 1848 and fled to America. And they had 48ers were the ones who started the Republican Party, which were called the Red Republicans, which is why the American Republicans to this day wear the red tie and the Democrats wear the blue tie, because there was a time when the Democrats were conservative and the Republicans were radical red communists. And that's why the red still is the Republican side, even though now the Republicans are the conservatives. If you're confused, don't worry, I'm sure it's meant to be that way. Baynard Rustin's replacement in 1961 as secretary and advisor to King was Jack O'Dell, also known as Hunter Fitz O'Dell. According to official records, in 1962, Jack O'Dell was a member of the National Committee of the Communist Party USA. He had been listed as a Communist Party member as early as 1956. So everyone around King is a communist, basically. O'Dell was given a job of acting executive director for SCLC, which is, I mean, like the World Council Churches, South African Council Churches, total Communist Party front. According to the St. Louis Globe Democrats of 1962, they've got a communist running the whole thing. And here you go, Communist Party marching happily in King's type marches. When word of O'Dell's Communist Party membership became known, King fired O'Dell with much fanfare, but immediately, without fanfare, rehired him as director of the New York office of the SCLC, as confirmed by the press at the time. So he had communists everywhere around him at every level. In 1963, a black man from Monroe, North Carolina, called Robert Williams, made a trip to Peking, China. Here he is a guest of Mao Zedong. And exactly before, just 20 days before King's 1963 march in Washington, Williams successfully met with Mao Zedong and urged him to speak out on behalf of King's movement. He's got the support of Brezhnev in Russia and Mao Zedong in China. Yep, these people. This character, biggest mass murderer in the history of the world. 68 million confirmed deaths under Mao Zedong. Just the kind of person you want as your ally if you stand for freedom. Mr. Williams was also around this time maintaining his primary residence in Cuba. That's Fidel Castro's communist Cuba, from which he made regular broadcasts to the southern USA 3 times a week from high-powered AM transmitters in Havana under the title Radio Free Dixie. Fidel Castro gave him radio and all this to broadcast. Uncle Fidel, the oldest dictator reigning in the world at that time. Although I think that Robert Mugabe tried hard to beat him as far as that goes. In these broadcasts from Cuba, Williams urged violent attacks by blacks against white Americans, and he wrote a book entitled Negroes with Guns. The writer of the foreword to this book, Martin Luther King Jr. Isn't he meant to be a pacifist? What's he doing writing a foreword for a violent revolutionary book? It's interesting to note that the editors and publishers of this book were all supporters of the infamous Fair Play for Cuba Committee, which is all total communist front. And here's Robert Williams, wanted by the FBI poster. According to King's biographer and sympathizer David Garrow, King privately described himself as a Marxist. In his 1981 book, The FBI and Martin Luther King Jr., Garrow quotes King as saying in a SCLC staff meeting, "We have moved into a new era, which must be an era of revolution. The whole structure of American life must be changed. We are engaged in the class struggle." This is Marx 101. The gospel of freedom. Well, what about the gospel of Jesus Christ? Stanley Levison can best be described as King's behind-the-scenes handler. Levison, who had for years been charged with the secret funding of Soviet funds to the Communist Party USA, was King's mentor and actually the brains behind many of King's most successful ploys and his features. It was Levison who edited King's book Stride Towards Freedom. It was Levison who arranged for publisher. It was Levison who prepared King's income tax returns. Boy, you'd want a friend like this. It was Levison who really controlled the fundraising and agitation activities. He wrote many of King's speeches. King described Levison as one of his closest friends. And these are all his different speeches, which Levison basically wrote. The Federal Bureau of Investigation had for many years been aware of Stanley Levison's communist activities. And it was Levison's close association with King that brought about the initial FBI interest in King. Because they wouldn't have been interested in him otherwise. But because the FBI had to counter communism during the Cold War, it's like, whoa, what's all these communists doing gravitating around this King character? And here you can see Levison marching with this very prominent Jewish Torah type thing. And there's old MLK himself. Lest you be tempted to believe that the controlled media's lie about racists and the FBI being out to get King just because he was a black man, you should be aware that the man most responsible for the FBI's probe of King was Assistant Director William Sullivan. Sullivan described himself as a liberal, and he really was a liberal. And he said initially he was 100% for King because he saw him as an effective and badly needed leader for the black people in their desire for civil rights, which he supported. And in fact, there's well-meaning Christians like Charlton Heston. I mean, there's Charlton Heston, and if I'm not mistaken, is that not Tony Curtis? Yeah. Yep, and you've got Quentin Jefferson, all this. And Charlton Heston, on the march to Washington, happily marched with King, thinking that this was about civil rights. He didn't realize it was a communist front at the time. And here you can see Marlon Brando, another major Hollywood great, and here you can see James Garner, Paul Newman, Marlon Brando, I mean, all marching on Washington 963, happily, enthusiastically supporting, because they thought that King was about civil rights. They didn't understand the communist agenda. And Burt Lancaster and Charlton Heston, and plainly, these people did not understand the full agenda. Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte. And here, the idea that he was against the administration is nonsense. John F. Kennedy through to Lyndon Johnson, they encouraged and they supported and they did everything they could to help Martin Luther King Jr.'s agenda, because he was demanding on the streets what they were trying to push through Congress. And so he's received at the White House by the President of the United States. Martin Luther King Jr. was not on the outside. He was, in fact, part of the establishment's move. This is what the established America wanted. He was the front man, agitating in the streets what they were trying to push down. So it's bottom-up, top-down approach. This is classic communism. They get the mobs in the streets to run around, mobilize the people, to make a scene, to agitate, to help them to push through the legislation they want to push through anyway. And the people on the ground think that they're actually revolutionaries and they're working against the system, and meanwhile they're just pawns for the system. And here again you've got, this is the Attorney General of the United States. This is the brother of John F. Kennedy. This is Robert Kennedy. And there's Lyndon Johnson. And there's MLK. I mean, the whole bunch there, and you can see they're very happy to be seen together. This, and by the way, regularly, Robert Kennedy regularly wrapped over the knuckles the head of the FBI for what he was doing in putting taps on King, because they wanted King's agenda to go ahead. And the FBI is trying to do their job to fight communism, and regularly the Attorney General is phoning and saying, stop this harassment of King, stop this, and you know, you're not allowed to do this, but in fact the FBI went ahead. And so here you've even got Bobby and Martin. And, I mean, he was the biggest advocate of MLK. And for example, just to show you the kind of micromanaging down of the March on Washington, Bobby Kennedy met with him on the request of his brother, who was then the president, to make sure that they have lots of porta toilets and educate the marchers ahead of time to use them, that nobody can get pictures of the demonstrators urinating on the mall or being in any way not adhering to civil codes, because they don't want to give the people any stereotypes that they're not civilized and they don't have high standards and so on. And they had to prime the people, prepare them, and they had to prepare all sorts of things to just make it work well. And here's the president's office and attorney general helping them on organizing everything and even the logistics and the pre-training of people to present the best image. And of course the press was determined to only present the best image of these marches and to make sure they didn't get any pictures published of something that didn't present the image they wanted to present of King as a noble, wonderful person and so on. Here's Lyndon Johnson, president after John F. Kennedy, meeting with him in his office. And, you know, I mean, they don't look like enemies. In fact, they were on their side. The probe of King not only confirmed the suspicions of the FBI about King's communist beliefs and associations, but because of the wiretapping of his hotel rooms, they revealed him to be a hypocrite, an immoral degenerate, and a charlatan. According to Assistant Director Sullivan, he's number two of the FBI, who had direct access to the surveillance files on King, which American people and the rest of the world are not allowed to see. King embezzled or misapplied substantial amounts of money contributed to the civil rights movement. Sounds just like our dear Alan Busack in South Africa. King, in fact, I think Alan Busack based his life upon MLK. King used SCLC funds to pay for liquor. Numerous prostitutes, both black and white, were brought to his hotel rooms, often two at a time, for drunken sex orgies, which sometimes lasted for days. These types of activities were normative for King's speaking and organizing tours. In other words, the nights after he was addressing the people about civil rights issues, he was engaged in whoremongering, drunken orgies, while blaspheming God's name repeatedly, and he was using church funds to pay for it. The National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, which is putting on display the two bedrooms from the Lorraine Hotel where King stayed the night before he was shot, has declined to depict in any way the occupants of those rooms. Why? According to exhibit designer Gerhard Isterhold, that would be close to blasphemy. The reason? Martin Luther King Jr. spent his last night on Earth having perverted sex with two women at the hotel and physically beating and abusing a third, while blaspheming God's name repeatedly. How can they depict that? And so outside this motel, they've got King thing and a croaking King and all that sort of thing. Sullivan also stated King had alienated the affections of numerous married women. According to Sullivan, who in 30 years with the Federal Bureau of Investigation had seen everything that was to be seen of the steamy side of life, King was one of the seven people he had encountered who was a total degenerate. In other words, you put him in the category of right there, lower than, I mean, he dealt with Al Capone, he dealt with Dillinger. I mean, you know, you can just think of some of the worst gangsters on the planet, and you put King right there at the bottom of the lowest seven criminals he had ever come across. Total degenerate. Noting that violence was almost invariably attending King's supposedly non-violent marches. You know, he had talked peace, but war was in his heart. They would always have these peace marches that turned violent. And that was the intention. It's like Mandela. You can just look at, for example, if you take the deaths under apartheid in some of the facts, according to the South African Race Relations Institute, 18,700 people died under 48 years of apartheid. 18,700. This includes soldiers who died in the war, policemen who were murdered, criminals shot by the police, rioters shot, people killed by rioters, people necklaced by the ANC, and of them all, 14,700 were murdered after Mandela was released in the 4 years between 1990 and 94 when Mandela became president. And most of those were black-on-black violence of Zulus killing ANC and ANC killing Zulus, in Carter versus ANC violence, the so-called black on black violence in townships. So when you take the 18,700 people killed under apartheid, the vast majority were killed by the anti-apartheid agitators like the ANC. Okay. But 25,000 people could get murdered a year under Nelson Mandela without a war, versus 18,700 of mostly his people killing others in 48 years. Make sense? But anyway, every time Mandela spoke in English, Mandela spoke peace. And every time he said anything in Xhosa, he called them to violence and attack. And this has been proven by the people who translated. He'd speak peace in English and he'd speak violence in Xhosa. And his followers knew what he says in English is just for the press. Don't worry about it. That's PR. When he speaks in Xhosa, he's speaking to us and he's giving us our instructions. MLK had another way of doing it. I mean, he'd speak code, but the people knew exactly what he meant. And Sullivan's probe revealed a very different King from the carefully crafted public image. King welcomed members of many different black groups as members of the SCLC, many of them advocates and practitioners of violence. King's only admonition on the subject was that they should embrace tactical nonviolence, the Gandhi approach. Gandhi didn't mind violence, but, you know, he had to beat the British Empire. You can't do this by direct violence because the British Empire had more violent means and weapons. So he used passive resistance in order to bring them down from within. It was a clever approach. So strategically, pacifism can be used even if you don't believe in pacifism. You understand? So here's a 1964 NAACP meeting. And like everyone around this table is a communist. Gus Hall, he was the head of the Communist Party USA. Henry Winstone, William Patterson, all part of the Communist Party USA. MLK and Muhammad, black Muslim chief, and MLK and Floyd McKissick of CORE, announcing the march through Mississippi in 1966, which was nice and violent. Jesse Gray, serious terrorist at the CORE convention. And these are courtesy of CORE, trashing shops, think EFF. It's just following the MLK standard. Fred Shuttleworth, total Communist Party member. MLK in full speed. And in the marches, Freedom Now, marching, fight for freedom, stop the bombing, yep, out of Vietnam. By the way, stop the bombing isn't stop the bombing in America, it's America's bombing in Vietnam, which I would think should stop anyway, but that's not the point. It's hypocritical because the people complaining about bombing in Vietnam in a war were supporting bombing of civilian targets in America, bombs and shops and so on. And of course you had arson and burning and destruction, and this is what came in the wake of Martin Luther King Jr. marches. All kinds of arson and destruction. Whole streets wasted. Well, I mean, we've seen it in our country, but now we're talking about America. Look at this confiscated Muslim flag from 1965 March. These are some of the weapons confiscated by these pacifists. And cars destroyed, buildings destroyed, ransacked, burned. We know this, but this is just to give you a bit of an idea. Demonstrations at the entrance to the university. Now look at these sort of ones that they've got, that they confiscated from some marches that they arrested. Kill for peace, God is dead. Okay, Vietnam and so on. Black Panther, you know, that was the name of a terrorist group in America. I like Panthers, but replace J. Edgar Hoover. Yeah, well, here's the head of the FBI. Fight for socialism. The peace sign, that's a broken upside down cross. Karl Marx, work of the world unite. I'm for sexual freedom. If it moves, fondle it. Legalize narcotics. Legalize contraceptives. Let's legalize pot. Acid test. Equality for homosexuals. I mean, can you kind of see it's a package deal? Sexual perversion and the communist revolution work together. R.J. Rastini says, men prefer an order that permits sin and forbids freedom. They see God's law as tyranny because a control of sin. They prefer controls and freedom and the license to sin. That's why people don't mind being a slave of narcotics or of pornography or of the government, as long as they don't have to serve Christ and worship God and obey his laws. Here's John F. Kennedy looking through the results of one of King's peaceful marches, and he still supported King. Sullivan also related an incident in which King met in a financial conference with Communist Party representatives, not knowing that one of the participants was an infiltrator actually working for the FBI. J. Edgar Hoover personally sought it that documented information on King's communist connections were forwarded to the President and to Congress. Conclusive information from FBI files was provided to major newspapers, newswire services, that Martin Luther King Jr. was a communist, controlled by communists, funded by communists, involved in the communist agenda, with the communists completely supporting everything he does. And they didn't bother publishing it or acting upon it. The head of the FBI informs them, gives all documentation, and the entire government media ignores it. Even in the 1960s, the controlled media and political left were so determined to promote the racial mixing program in America. King was their man. Nothing was going to get in their way. Didn't matter about facts, integrity, or anything like that. With few minor exceptions, these facts have been kept away from the American people. And even in American Christian schools and Christian churches, you will get adoration and eulogies for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The pro-King propaganda machine grinds on today, and many Christians publicly quote from Martin Luther King more prominently than Bible passages. That university graduation that I went to, that I mentioned earlier, in 3 hours, I didn't hear one quote from the Bible or from Christ or any of his apostles or any of the reformers or any of the church fathers. Nothing. Not from Andrew Murray, not from Spurgeon, not a quote from any Christian. They all consistently in 3 hours quoted from Martin Luther King Jr., Mandela, Invictus, Gandhi, Voltaire. What on earth? What are the forces and motivations behind the controlled media's active promotion of King? What does it tell you about our politicians when you see them, almost without exception, falling over themselves to honor King as an international hero? What does it tell you about a society when any public criticism of this extremely flawed individual is considered grounds for dismissal? I mean, you can lose your job, you can lose promotion, you can fail at school if you voice just a little bit of the things I've been saying tonight. What does it tell you about the controlled media when you see how they successfully suppress the truth and hold out a picture of King that can only be described as propaganda? I mean, really, what else is it? King was under FBI surveillance for several years until he died due to his ties with communist organizations throughout the country. King accepted money from organizations to fund his movements, and in return, he had to appoint communist leaders to run districts of his SCLC, who could then project their communist ideas to the large audience. And the fact that America today, well, especially under Clinton and Obama, became as communist as it did, and as hostile to Christianity and to Christian countries internationally, is to a large extent a success of this movement, of infiltrating churches and promoting the agenda of a Marxist. A federal judge in the 60s ruled that the FBI files on King's links to communism remained top secret till 2027. That's a 60-year gag. 60 years. I mean, only the Lusitania files have been sealed for that long before. Senator Jesse Helms appealed to the Supreme Court in 1983 to release the files so that the current bill in Parliament to create the Martin Luther King federal holiday could be abolished. He was denied. Now, he's a senator. He's the most senior senator in the Senate at one time. And Jesse Helms couldn't get those files open even to the members of the Senate. And so they erected this colossal idol. So which holiday honors a philanderer, a drunk, a liar, a plagiarist, and a cheater? Here's pictures of him with classic commies and at communist events. A total fraud. His real name wasn't Martin Luther King Jr. It was Michael King. He wasn't really a reverend. He only got his doctorate through plagiarism and cheating, so he didn't earn it. He's a sexual deviant, a thief, and a liar. Woman beater, plagiarist, subversive, adulterous, sexual deviant. Get the facts. King was a fraud. Brave people who put this one out. They encourage you to visit the martinlutherking.org website for all the disgusting facts about this disgrace to our nation. Then you get Malcolm X, who testifies some things to, and he's a Marxist terrorist. Obama, of course, patterned himself on MLK. And you get this blasphemous abomination. How do you control a nation? You distract them, you deceive them, you divide them, you indoctrinate them, and you disarm them. the price of apathy towards public affairs is to be ruled by evil men. I mean, when you hear people say, I'm not interested in politics, well, politics is interested in you, and you might not be interested in politics, but you're still, they're still going to take your taxes, take your children, indoctrinate your children, cut off your water, whatever. I mean, you know, if you're not interested in politics, you're going to suffer the consequences. You'll be ruled by evil people. Over 2,000 years ago, the Roman leader Cicero wrote, a nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and he carries his banners openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gates freely. His sly whispers rustling in all alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears, not traitor. He speaks and accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their garments, and he appeals to the baseness that lies in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of a city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to be feared. Aldous Huxley in 1932 published The Brave New World, which describes the future state of human society, slavery, where people live carefree lives in a technologically advanced society subdued by drugs and bombarded with endless stimulation. Can we relate? The 20th century idols of atheism, humanism and communism are now mainstream. Governments do not want informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. That's against their interests. They want obedient workers who are smart enough to run the machines and dumb enough and to just accept it passively. There's two types of parasites. Ticks and leeches suck blood till they've got enough, then they drop off. But the banksters and the politicians never drop off. I mean, they just keep sucking the blood out of you. They don't stop. Just think Mugabe. Yep, there's a blood-sucking parasite if there ever was one. These people seem to think that they are standing against the system, whereas actually they are just cannon fodder for the system. These people thought that they were actually fighting against the interests of the capitalists. Actually, they're working for the same capitalists, the Rothschilds, the George Soros's. They fund these guys because they've bought up the communists. The communists are in the pockets of these mega capitalists like Soros. And the destruction of farms in Rhodesia, who benefited? Communist China. Interesting enough, LONRO, London Rhodesia Association, which is a company run by London, got a lot of the farms that were taken away from farmers who could speak Shona. Yeah, I mean, Mugabe is an example. We've looked at that and what he did to people just because they're too male and too pale. Well, even female, doesn't matter. Break the arms for voting for the wrong party. The truth does not change just because you don't want to hear it. Truth is the new hate speech. During a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes an offensive act. Truth is hate for those who hate the truth. Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless for cowardice. Propaganda kills. That's why we need to study the truth in the Bible so that you can be freed from the deceptions in the world. It's better to be divided by truth than united in sin. It is better to speak the truth that hurts and falsehoods that comfort. It is better to be hated for telling the truth than liked for telling a lie. It's better to stand alone with a multitude, stand alone with the truth, than to be wrong with a multitude. That which can be destroyed by the truth should be. Some people say, you mustn't bring this up, it's going to destroy this perception on this. Well, if the truth can destroy it, it needs to be destroyed. The definition of stupid is knowing the truth, seeing the truth, but still believing the lies. Like my dear friend, who knew what I was telling him, but he still thought he should quote from MLK, because that should get him a few amens and a couple of brownie points and ticks on the teacher's gold star chart up on the wall somewhere. I'm not going to censor myself to comfort your ignorance. You can lean a man to knowledge, but you cannot make him think. Cornelius van Til said, there's not a square inch of space, not a minute of time, where the believer in Christ can withdraw from responsibility of being a soldier of the cross. Satan must be driven from the field and Christ must rule. Truth conquers. truth matters. It doesn't matter what I say, it doesn't matter what they say, it doesn't matter what anyone says, it's what the Bible says. That's why Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. There's no such thing as a harmless lie. Every lie deceives, every lie enslaves, and the truth sets us free. And ultimately the question is, where will you spend eternity? God now commands all men everywhere to repent. We've got this article available in print on the table there, the essence of this message in lecture form. It's on our reformationsa.org website. We regularly put up on Reformation 500 a lot of articles and links to PowerPoints and so on like this. There's other great books that can help us to reclaim our campuses for Christ. The agenda forms are brilliant in exposing how the Marxists have been hijacking education institutions and news media. What we are talking about is the politics of guilt manipulation. Of course, Nelson Mandela is another idol of the New World Order, as is Martin Luther King Jr., Lincoln, Churchill. We'll get to them in good time. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and so on. But propaganda and deception in the media, understanding the truths of our history, is absolutely critical if we're to reclaim the campuses to Christ and answer skeptics.